Dave Moore
on Today FM.
Sitting across from me is a man who wears many hats of different shapes and sizes. You'll mostly hear him on Today FM, 4:30, of course, the last word, Monday to Friday.
But the most important.
The most important of all, Matt. Yes, yes. He's also a podcaster and, of course, an author, as well as a dad and a golfer and all those things. We'll get to all that in a while. But, Matt, you're here wearing your author's hat today.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, first
Thank
of all.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, always great to have you in. You've written a book called Dynasty,
yeah.
Which disappointingly for me isn't about the 80s TV show with massive shoulder pads and perms. It's about the Dunn family.
Some of whom along the way in the 1980s would have worn massive shoulder pads and Dunn perms. Although not Ben, in fairness.
No, not Ben. He didn't have the perm. Yeah, unfortunately for us. But the Dunn family are a very interesting. So Dunn Stores, first of all, I suppose, is what we all kind of think and know of when you think of the Dunn family.
Yeah, Dunn Stores is one of the iconic shops in Ireland. There's nearly 100 stores throughout the country, for supermarkets in many cases, in all cases, but also you have clothing and you have homewares in various locations. And Dunn's is a remarkable story in that it started in 1944 by the family Ben Dunn Sr., who's dead over 40 years now, but it has endured over that period of time. Very few shops actually have or
point.
Under the
yeah.
same names and most certainly not under the same ownership. The names can actually stay the same, but the ownership changes. And in the case of Dunn Stores, the Dunn family, and now with the likes of the Heffernans and McMahons, who were born Dunn, been very important part. They own it fully and they run it. And that's actually what makes it very interesting as well, particularly as the book goes through some of the extraordinary stories of the events that they've been involved in.
I want to get to those stories, but talk to me in general about supermarket ownership. I mean, Is it traditional that a family remains in charge of a supermarket chain, or is it very quickly bought up by the corporate world?
Yeah, well, Tesco would be your biggest example. That's a stock market quota company from the UK, although the boss is a Cork man, actually, who would have been a year behind me in UCC.
Wow.
The likes of Aldi and Lidl, I think, still have family ownership.
Walmart in the US
Sam Walton. However, they wouldn't own it 100%.
Yeah.
They'd control it, but there are other investors, other shareholders who've been involved over the years. And the difference in Dunn Stores is the family holding on to it all the
100%,
time. And
okay.
just been so determined to do so.
And when I was thinking about the Dunn family and thinking about talking to you, I kind of in my brain started going through the things I can remember, and the first thing that popped into my mind was meeting Ben Dunn Jr. a number of times when he would do his ads for his Ben Dunn gyms, and he would do them himself, and he'd be in the radio station I used to work in, and he'd walk in and he'd bump into Ben Dunn and he'd go in straight away and go, "Get to my gym, they are great." He was always just having the crack. He was just so straightforward with it, and he never hid who he was, or he leaned into it. But then you start thinking about all the things that went before that, and I mean, there was the kidnapping. Like, he was kidnapped by the IRA.
Well, I'm glad you started with that, because, you know, an awful lot of people, particularly when Ben died in November 2023, they all started going on, "Do you remember what happened in Orlando?"
Which
was the issue with the drugs and the cocaine bust and the hookers and all the rest of it and stuff. And that's where a lot of things with Ben, where a lot of people started. But I make the big issue in Ben's life as part of the book, the kidnap in 1981, and the trauma that he experienced as a result of what was a horrific experience, and how that then led to him unravelling a decade later, because he never actually adequately addressed that situation. So I'm very sympathetic in particular to the issue in relation to the kidnap and how that marked the rest of his life.
And like, for someone who's listening now who maybe knows Dunn Stores, is maybe young enough not to have been around when either of those big stories were happening, why would Ben Dunn have been targeted for a kidnapping? Was it just money?
Absolutely, great wealth. The ransom was about £500,000.
Which in 1980 is a lot of money.
It's millions now. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. And I get that. I have a lot of new detail in the book about the circumstances in which the channel was set up to pay the ransom. And he was very lucky to escape with his life in relation to that. And it all left him and the rest of the family fearful for many, many years to come. But yeah, already by the time 1981 had come around, these were possibly the richest family in Ireland. And actually, just on a wider point, there was a spate of kidnappings and attempted kidnappings at the time, and supermarket bosses were particularly vulnerable. So there would have been an attempt made on Fergal Quinn, Super Quinn, which failed. And there was also the kidnapping of Don Tidy, the boss of Quinnsworth, actually did happen. And again, two people lost their lives in him being rescued. And there was an attempt to kidnap the owner of Quinnsworth, Galen Weston, although he was out of the country at the time. The kidnappers had the wrong information. So that is part of this story. It was fraught times in the 1980s when the IRA tried to finance a campaign of violence by targeting individuals who they felt, because of being involved in retailing supermarket businesses, would have ready access to cash.
That was the key thing, yeah. Do you think, to those of us who maybe are of an age to remember a lot of these stories, are there things in this book that you uncover that are, inverted commas, previously unknown, or at least previously explored?
Particularly in relation to the kidnap and had the release. I mean, I spoke to the person who worked with Dunn Stores at the outset to set up an alternative line. But the Gardaí were monitoring what Dunn Stores were doing, and they intercepted various attempts to make the payment. But that had been anticipated by the person on Dunn Stores' side who was working most of the time, called Noel Fox. And he went to a trade union official called Phil Flynn, who had connections into Sinn Féin and to the IRA, and they set up this alternative channel. Because Flynn had been involved in negotiating the release of other people from kidnap about 5 or 6 years earlier, so he did speak to me in detail for the book, which is the first time he's ever revealed his involvement in it.
Do the families of the subjects of your book, do they ever give you, you know, any kind of permission, not permission, access, not access? Like, for example, the Dunn family for this book, did you talk to any of them?
I tried to get Margaret to talk to me because she's a central figure in the book, but she is notoriously private and shy about these things. Although I do point out in the book how she and her father actually did, on their own terms, interact with the media over the years. So the headquarters of Dunn Stores is only around the corner from here. I went in with a handwritten letter, gave it into reception, asked it be given to Margaret Heffernan, and didn't get a response, as I think. Then got her private phone number, got her text messages from the various people I'm talking to, started texting her, ringing her, no response, nothing. And then got various people telling me, you know, we've been told not to talk to you and the rest of it. And that's fine. But a big part, that doesn't worry me, because I would have had a similar situation in previous books that I've done about Tony O'Reilly and Michael O'Leary, in that, you know, you can get to as many people as you need, but sometimes if people are very close to them turn around and start giving you, they give you sort of the sanitized, authorized version,
of course,
which can become a problem, and it's their own truth and the rest of it and stuff. But what I did have, which is central to the book, is I had a whole range of material from many meetings with Ben, particularly during the 1990s, and particularly at the time when he was falling out with his siblings in relation to his continued management of the company because of his drug use in Orlando.
Right.
And I had a wealth of material from that time, much of it from Ben's own mouth to use, although some of it would still be so legally sensitive in relation to people who are still alive. Not everything could go in, but an awful lot of really good stuff has.
It's been nominated for the Non-Fiction Book of the Year in the On Post Book Awards. So can we get a round of applause in the studio, please, for Matt Cooper? Although, listen, you can go and vote, by the way. That's open to public vote, so please go and do that before, is it November 16th?
I think that's the date.
He thinks. He's a tattooed on the side of his eyelids. Go and vote for Dynasty and get Matt that award. But I don't know why I'm being so nice to this fella, plugging his book and having him on. Do you remember Mayhem, when he came in dressed as Elmo, and the name he called me repeatedly in a 3-minute window? He just got, must have been about 10 times he called me a
Dave Moore, you're nothing but a Muppet. You have been renamed as Dave Muppet Moore, and one of the things that makes you a Muppet is the way that you do your bad joke.
You're only a Muppet, Dave! You're only a Muppet, Dave! What have you got to say for yourself? That was all in the spirit of Mayhem. I don't remember a hug and an apology in the corridor afterwards.
Why would I apologize to you?
It's hard to argue, in fairness. It's hard to argue when that complaint is leveled at you. Let's talk about everything else you do, Matt, because obviously there's a last word. Half four today, you'll be on. It's the presidential election day. Obviously, there's moratoriums. I know there's moratoriums. We're not talking about it, but it's get out and vote. I'd say exercise your democratic right. But you do love the show. You've been here for doing that show for how long now?
We're nearly the end of 23 years.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And like, having done radio for as long, I've changed show many times within that and done lots of different, worked for different radio stations. But like, there is a great joy in owning a space in the radio landscape and leaning into it every day. But the relentlessness of radio is not something that I think many people understand, that it's every day, it's every week, it's every month, every year, but it's also every link, it's every interview. Like, you're constantly just focused on that live broadcast for those 2.5 hours for you, 3 hours for me. Like, it's a lot.
You know, people ask me out there, well, who's your favourite ever interview? And I can hardly remember who I had on yesterday's programme, let alone who might have been on last year or 10 years ago and the rest of it. Because you are, even when you're on air, you know, when you finish the thing, rather than actually kicking yourself, I should have done that better, as I used to do probably a lot more, you just actually have to move. Make sure the next one is good.
All you can ever focus on is the next section.
Yeah. So you keep relentlessly moving forward.
And does that apply, you think, to your podcasting as well? Because obviously you've got a number of those going on. You've Magnified with Matt Cooper.
Which is longer form interviews, in the way that, you know, we do long interviews on The Last Word.
Yes.
And, you know, we would, like, you know, there would have been the presidential candidates this week. One got about 23 minutes in studio. The other got 15 minutes on the phone, but only because her political party didn't make her available to come into studio and for the time that we wanted, because we were conscious of being balanced and the rest of it. So we would sometimes have long interviews, but a podcast gives you the opportunity to go again and maybe go into a little bit more detail and things. Not that I'm saying it's any better than the radio,
sure, but
it's
just
a bit different.
Yeah, and then Path to Power with Ivan Yates, obviously you've got opinion and you've got back and forth and you've got, do you like the clash?
Yeah, that's fun. One of the reasons that we do it is, you know, we do take seriously what we are saying, but we are conscious as well that there is a degree of entertainment involved in it. And it seems that the audience likes the sort of the yin and yang between the two of us and us giving out to each other and having different opinions and things. And, you know, if people hear the one that'll be out over the weekend about the presidential election, I floated a particular idea to him about future presidencies, where he, of course, just derided me and shouted and roared at me. And, you know, maybe a lot of people would agree with him that the particular idea that I have is not a good one.
I think Matt Cooper for president is a great idea.
Oh,
I think it's a great idea.
No,
I think you've heard it here
Shut
first.
Up, Shut up, okay? You muppet.
You're only a muppet.
You're a muppet.
Matt, you sit on a yoga ball.
Yes.
I know we've talked about this before, but I'm just intrigued. Have you ever fallen off?
No.
No. Core strength is 10 out of 10.
I've been on it for at least 10 years at this stage.
Yeah, he has even at his desk, and there's a chair for someone else who wants to sit down and hot desk with Matt. But if Matt comes in, chair shoved out of the way, on the yoga ball, bouncing around. Good man.
Good for the back.
Yeah. You're love golf. You recently fell in love with golf.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Actually, I will be going from here to the gym, where I will be doing a session working on my back, will be what I'm doing today. Legs and back day in the gym.
Look at this fella. Getting swole for the Oris and Uthron in 7 years. Dream four ball. Who would you love to play? Who are the three others you'd love to go around?
That's the first time I've been asked that. Because, you know, you get asked these questions. Who would you like to sit down with?
Sure, dinner and all that. Yeah, no, like that. I want the golf stuff.
I never thought of it.
Okay, think now.
Well, first of all, Aileen would insist that she has to be part of it. I now need to find two other spots.
I mean, do you want golfers? Do you want conversationalists?
No, I wouldn't want golfers. I'd be embarrassed.
But you could learn, pick up a few tips from, you know.
I know, I'm at a level which is just completely different. Like, I'm a high handicapper, so that's not going to... Can I come back to you on that one?
Okay, well, you'll have to come back to me now. You can't fob this off, Minister.
In fairness,
answer the question,
okay.
Cooper.
Golf is a big part of Dynasty because Ben Dunn was such a big golfer.
Okay.
And there were stories about his gambling on the golf course in it.
Nice.
And the 10-10-20s.
10-10-20s.
Well, you know, that was an old slogan for fertilizers back in the 80s, but for him it was 10 grand on the front nine, 10 grand on the back nine, and 20 grand for the overall result.
I literally thought you were talking about tenors. That's why it shows you how naive I am.
No. We're talking about 10K in the 1980s.
In the 1980s. Okay, I demand you send me a voice note at some point today with your other two golf players, make up the four ball.
All right.
Matt Cooper's book, Dynasty, is out now in shops, nominated for the On Post Nonfiction Book Award. He's on the radio at 4:30 today. Matt, thank you very much for taking
the time. Thank you. I'm sorry for calling you.
No, don't apologise. I actually prefer it, to be honest with you. Dave Moore on Today FM.